There's nothing the country cured with a wink and a fart, and you're listening to WGXC Negra 90.7 FM.
Happy holiday
from Camp Hill Hospitality!
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the Office of the Governor and the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the Greene County Cultural Fund, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC monthly supporters, whose generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support. Wave Farm's WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Bindlestiff Family Circus in Hudson, New York. WGXC monthly supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Joshua Solomon reports in the Times Union that Common Cause New York is suing the State Board of Elections and Supreme Court in Albany County over its approval of a specific voting machine. The election reform organization wants the court to overturn the board's August vote to buy the Express Vote XL digital voting machine ahead of the 2024 presidential election. The board approved the machine on the conditions that the company would fix potential security issues with the source code of the software and ensure that all audits are completed by hand. One issue with the machines is that state law requires the voter to have the ability to check their ballot before submission to know it is accurate. These machines are touchscreen with voters choosing candidates and then getting a printout with their choices. The printout has a barcode that the computer can read, but the voter cannot. Common Cause contends that makes the machine not compliant with state law. The group also pointed to a recent election in Northampton, Pennsylvania, where an Express Vote XL machine printed ballots with errors in two races. A Express Vote spokesperson said that was a, and I quote, clerical labeling error, end quote. The Common Cause court petition also said, and I quote, use of a barcode can, and predictably will, provide fodder for those who peddle in election voter fraud, fear-mongering, and conspiracy theories about rigged elections to reduce public confidence that votes are actually cast and counted, end quote. Former New York Governor David Paterson championed the touchscreen machines as an improvement to the, and I quote, voting experience for people with disabilities, end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Mid-Hudson News reports that Germantown will receive a $240,340 community forest conservation grant to protect forest resources. That will allow Germantown to acquire 23 acres adjacent to the town's Palatine Park and historic First Reformed Church of Germantown Parsonage. The grant will also expand a trail network and create better access to nearby parking areas. And you can read more about this story in Mid-Hudson News. Columbia Green Media reports that on November 29th, New Lebanon Town Supervisor Trista Hodling announced a $500,000 grant from the New York State Office of Parks, Recreation, and Historic Preservation for improvements to Stratford Memorial Park. The grant will mean a new playground, a senior fitness equipment area and fitness walking loop, new benches and shade trees, and new pathways. Stratford Memorial Park's 19.75 acres already has two little league fields, one softball field, tennis courts, and a basketball court. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, December 1st. Local early morning temperatures range from 26 degrees in Steventown to 37 in Roxbury. Regional average soil temperature is 41 degrees. Things are a little warmer than recent days. It's also going to get wetter. Rain enters the area around 1 p.m. and we see our high temperature of 49 degrees. Rain should be steady by 3 and will continue past dark, tapering off near midnight. We see a low of 38, then tomorrow is looking dry with a high of 51 at 2 p.m. Overnight, rain returns and we see a low of 38. Sunday, rain continues and gets stronger in the afternoon. We get a high of 47, and rain continues overnight into Monday, which will have a high around 45. Sunset today will be at 4:12 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:01 a.m. Next Friday will be the earliest sunset of the year. Looking way up, we see first Hadouken impact has been detected. We are not at storm level yet, but another is expected to amplify this one. X-class flare chances are at 10%. Plasma winds will be average at 532 kilometers per second with a thin density of 1 proton per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently terrible till dark, then fair below 15 megahertz overnight, maybe. There are low chances of aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 138, and this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
German measles, Russian flu, Montezuma's revenge. And why do we say a foreign word whenever someone sneezes?
Tomorrow, I'll take a look at swine flu, up close and personal. This is Les Nesbitt.
When a fight was right, so they sent him to the war.
Very well gone away, there's nothing left to say.
With Sancho Joe and an Aaron Gomer, loves in America.
The calling of the rosary, Spanish wine from far away. I'm a free-born man, love the USA. Yeah!
divide. I remembered how I swore that I'd come back to you one day, and as the sunset came to meet the evening on a hill, I told you I'd always love you, I always did, I always will. Very well gone away, there's nothing left to say, but to say adieu to your eyes as blue as the water in the bay, to big Jim Dwight, a man of war who was often heard to say, I'm a free-born man of the USA, I'm a free-born man of the USA, I'm a free-born man of the USA.
Hello, WGXC listeners. My name is Michael Hoy from the Camp Hill Hudson Radio Group. And in the studio, we have over here
Dan the Man Watowski.
Yay!
Matthew Whitney Hamilton.
Yay!
Oh. Oh, God. Over the top as usual. Ha ha. And who's next to Matthew? Oh, my goodness. Speechless?
Yeah, speechless Rachel.
Speechless
Rachel. And Margaret Schulman.
Welcome, dear listeners. We at Camp Hill Hudson have a few events coming up in December, which is literally right around the corner as we record, and we wanted to share them with you. The first event that we have, which is on December 2nd for Winter Walk, is the Camp Hill Hudson Chime Choir offering Christmas songs.
Yes.
Along with Ella Gent speaking "Twas the Night Before Christmas." And for those people that don't know what chimes are, maybe Matt and Rachel can talk about, you know, what it is and what you do with chime playing.
Chimes Choir.
What?
Chimes Choir.
Both of us.
Excuse me, I'm going home early after lunch, pal.
This is being recorded, and I'm not editing it.
You should go home.
See, beautiful people, we have this unblemished beauty.
Chimes Choir, performing
Christmas carols.
Chimes Choir sound like to play nice music with nice bells, chimes. Chimes, it sound like a nice...
Matthew, newsflash, you're going to have to carry on with all the life around you.
That is correct.
So if somebody rings,
Cookie,
you have to keep talking.
Chimes, choir, it sound like a nice music group of people. Play chimes. It sounds very different, like a bells. Bells, part of the choir in Triforum, but at Camp Hudson, there is a chimes choir with Onat on performing different kind of music with chimes. Please come out to hear nice chimes choir music.
That was a great description. And Onat, who is our leader of the chime choir, will be leading you, Matthew, and Rachel and playing these chime Christmas chime songs. There's about 12 of you playing. So the performances a Saturday at Winter Walk happen at 360 Warren Street in the Solaris building. It's a short, it's about 10 minutes or less, but we're doing it at three different time periods, at 5:30,
6:30,
and
7:30.
That's correct, yeah.
And please join us. We'd love to have you. And please sing Jingle Bells with us.
Oh, yeah. Well,
I can't
you just said Jingle Bells. You need to ring. Come on.
Yes, I am.
And Dan, yeah, you just joined the Chimes.
I just joined the Chimes Choir, and I would love to be there on Saturday, but I got to work.
Yeah, but you...
We're going to miss you, Dan.
You recently joined, and you said you really liked the atmosphere and contributing to musical pieces, right?
Yes, I had no idea that I was good at it, so...
So there you go.
You
ring
are
the bell.
Dan.
Okay.
I've been playing.
Yeah, you were just playing, but not the music though.
Okay.
Oh, the audience is gonna love that. Okay, now, I feel like I have somebody breathing down my neck, but we'll figure out who that is after
that's
the program.
That's Matthew breathing.
That's me breathing.
That's Matthew.
And Matthew, you sound like you're going in and out. Now, let's talk about. Something that's happening later in December, a very cool play. What's the name of the play that Campbell Hudson is putting on?
The Shepherd's Play.
Shepherd's Play.
Let's
talk about the Shepherd's Play and tell the audience what the story is about.
The Shepherd's Play is the story about three shepherds who go visit the babe. When it's about the story about when Jesus was born, but it's in the shepherd's perspective.
And it's got Mary and Joseph on their journey to Bethlehem,
yep,
looking for a lodge to give
birth to the baby Jesus. Yep.
Yeah, and yeah, it is from the perspective of the shepherds who are kind of bumbling and stumbling their way to find the baby. And Dan, you want to say about your role in the play?
My role that I play is I play one of the shepherds, Stickle. Now, Stickle is supposed to be this happy-go-lucky person who's bouncing up and down and playful and stuff like that. And
you are those things.
Well, not really, but still.
Well, anyway, in the play you are.
In the play, yeah, but yes, not real life.
Yes.
But anyway, so I actually have been, it's my first time ever being in or seeing the Shepherd's Play, and I'm really excited about it, so...
Yeah.
The only thing I don't like doing is the whole walking thing.
You're not a walker?
No.
Well, you see, that's a true actor. You're doing things that you would ordinarily not do. That is true craftsmanship.
And I don't like the whole standing thing.
Again, a true actor making the sacrifice for the sake of the play. Yes. Now, Rachel Shulman, may I ask... The audience would like to know if you have a role.
I did the Shepherd's Play like three times already, and this is my fourth time to be the angel.
What angel are you playing?
Yeah. Angel Gabriel.
Angel Gabriel, who does what?
That is speaking to Mary.
Yeah. Do you want to do a few lines?
I think my favorite part is the beginning part.
Okay, that's before you speak to Mary, like you're welcoming.
I like.
Okay.
Yeah, when we've done the song.
Yeah.
I am ready and prepared to do my favorite scene of the beginning of the play.
Okay,
to,
go ahead.
To welcome people to see.
Let's hear a few lines.
Yes. In right good faith, I entered this place. God give you good evening with his grace. A right good evening and the best of cheers. The Lord of heaven grant each one here.
Nice.
Most reverent worship.
Oh, there's
both
more.
Master and dame. Our service to you, pretty maineth the same.
That's pretty good. Nice.
Yes.
I was going to say, so there you go.
I think I stopped there.
You stopped there.
Now, so, what do you think?
I love it.
I would like to keep going, but I guess I want to wait until the actual play.
Yeah.
Been performed.
Yeah, you're giving a sneak preview. Dan, how about a few lines from your character?
A toy.
As you pop in and out, go ahead. What? Continue. A toy.
A toy.
There's more than that.
I'm trying to think of the lines here. Hold on a second.
What? Am I not?
What? Am I not first? I thought so to be, but here, Brother Gallus, before me I see.
Yeah, Stickle, how fair our lamb flock on the wold?
With our sheep, Gallus, I was quite cold.
Oh, of cold I am full sad. But look at my two hands, my lad.
Oh, must you have two by this head? Take 100 of mine in their stead.
Give me my gloves back, is what he's really saying. Okay, so there's a little sneak preview. Now, we should share the dates. So the play, the Shepherds, Campbell Hudson Shepherds play will be performed. Do you know the dates, Matthew?
15th and 16th of okay. Friday and Saturday.
So
December 15th, Friday, December 15th, and Saturday, December 16th.
That's right, Dan. Friday, December 15th at 7 p.m. and Saturday, December 16th at 4 p.m. in the First Presbyterian Church in Hudson at 4th and Warren, which is also where the Hudson WGXC studios are. So, and we're in there right now. So let's repeat those dates again for the Shepherd's Play.
Friday, December 15th and Saturday, December 16th.
Yeah, and Friday the 15th at 7 p.m., Saturday the 16th at 4 p.m., at 4th and Warren in Hudson.
On the First Presbyterian Church.
And a quick reminder, right, for the other event, Winter Walk, this Saturday at 5:30, 6:30, and 7:30 is our Christmas Chime Choir offering Christmas music with Elegant speaking to us the night before Christmas. That's at 360 Warren Street. The times to see it, 5:30, 6:30, 7:30. Yes. Matthew?
Shy's Choir, group of people in faith, all our friends who listen to our group registration, please bring your family friends to Campbell Hudson Community Chimes Choir Concert with All Night Trust at 5:30, 6:30, and 7:30 in gallery space. Merry Christmas to all. All you a good night. Thank you.
Good night.
So, Mayor Johnson, how's it going?
Good, good. I mean, besides the atrocities going on in the world.
I don't know, as a mayor of a small city, I don't know even know if you want to even go there or take a stand or talk about that, because it's such a difficult issue. So if you prefer, I don't need to get into it, but I did want to run it by you.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that, you know, I don't really have much say-so on. That I leave that to our higher elected officials, but you know, I am watching and paying attention to, you know, everything that's going on, and I do agree with a ceasefire, and I would like to see, you know, our higher elected to engage more with the communities, you know, around, especially around New York.
Yeah, so I think I had that music going, and I don't know 100% if we are on the air. Hopefully Tom's right there. Are we on the air, Tom? I'm going to keep playing the song until I get confirmation that we're on the air.
He said you are on the air.
Okay, so there you go. We're on the air. So I have. All it's right.
Tom. It's like God coming through.
This is like the perfect Monday afternoon show introduction to the mayor of Hudson right now. As unprofessional as you could possibly get. Folks, we have the mayor of Hudson. What's up?
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, my apologies for all of that, Mayor Johnson. That's kind of how we roll here. This is community radio, and we tend to be pretty informal here, especially on the Monday afternoon show.
Yeah, but, I know a little Kamala bit Johnson, about WGXC.
Yeah, you've been part of this radio program for so long. I remember you actually being on the air a bunch back in the day.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun.
Absolutely. So it's a pleasure and an honor to have you on the station. Just quick background. How did you find the radio station? How did that happen? And what was your stint there? To talk about, it was Drive Time, right?
Yeah. We did Drive Time. And first it started out as Barbershop Talks, which we used to record from Vern's actual living room. When we did that show, and then we moved on to Drive Time, which was 2 hours every Wednesday, and that was the live show, and we were on the air for, I want to say, about 10 years. We had, you know, a lot of interviews on all the topics, politics, mental health, you know, you name it, and, you know, we also had a lot of fun just, you know, joking around and, you know, building a relationship with our audience.
Absolutely. And one thing that I'm still to this day so envious about that show is the extent to which it was so participatory. You had so many people, you had call-ins, you had people live. It was like, it was always active live. And it's part of it because I just don't seem to have the time to do it, to get people to join and call in, or people are afraid to call. But I just admired how you were able to do that. How did you get so many people involved with that show?
I think just being involved in the community and, you know, putting out an ask. You know, we have, like you said, a lot of people, even though it's radio, still have a fear of, you know, public speaking. And I think for us, you know, having different topics that are always engaging. I know when I listen to the radio, I'm always in my car and I'm like yelling at the radio, answering questions like I'm part of the conversation. So, you know, just giving the listeners a chance to actually be part of the conversation was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And we learned a lot. You know, we learned a lot from WGXC.
Yeah. And then you launched into your political career. You got elected 2019 mayor of Hudson, the first black mayor of Hudson, the youngest mayor of Hudson at 34 years old ever. And I mean, you kind of made history right there just with those two, not to put it in a box, but those two categories alone.
Yeah.
Made history. And how did that feel?
It was a proud moment. I mean, I've thought about being mayor since I was in high school. That's kind of where the thought first started. And then as I got older and more involved in the community, I really started feeling like it could, you know, be a reality. And here I am,
here you are,
going into the third term.
I know. Congratulations. Here are 2023 and rocking and running. When's the election again?
It was a month ago, or well, this month actually. It was a couple weeks ago. It was a hard fought battle.
So I've been out of the loop. My apologies. So congratulations once again. This was groundbreaking, and we don't need to get into it too much. But I moved to Hudson in 2000, 2001. I had worked on farms in Columbia County around the area, but moved to Union Street with mm-hmm. a bunch of friends. A bunch had moved up from Pennsylvania. It was this kooky group of mostly white kids that moved up in construction and the arts, and like Hudson was changing back then in 2001, but it was kind of weird that it seemed like it was a very vibrant black community in Hudson. Definitely mm-hmm. the population of Hudson, you know, significant percent, I think higher than national average, you know better than I, but to never really have had a black, never had a black mayor, never had a black leader in the, I mean, in the church yeah. community, of course, you had wonderful people that I met mm-hmm. over the years, but like, why, I don't, like, okay, I'm going to ask you, why was there never a black mayor?
I don't know. I know there, you know, there's a lot of black individuals who have served on the common council. So like, I know there was often talks of certain individuals actually running, but building up the actual confidence to do it, you know, is different. You're in the spotlight 24/7 and everybody's always afraid of, you know, what people are going to say about them. So I don't think a lot of black individuals in our community at the time really wanted that kind of spotlight, or if they did, they weren't sure if it was their time or not.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I think it's human nature. I mean, I get nervous sometimes, even still going on the Monday afternoon show from my home, of the safety of my home over Zoom, or, you know, I'm like, okay, this is my, but I still am like, oh boy, it's a little bit nerve wracking. So I'm sure you had a little bit of those feelings going into it. How did you mm-hmm. overcome that, and how was that for you, and how'd you just bust through it?
Yeah, I mean, it was like, for me, I felt like I saw the city going in a direction that, you know, I was seeing a lot of my friends and people that I grew up with not being able to afford to live here. You know, a lot of things for youth being cut out. And I felt like I could make a difference. And this is something that, you know, as I said earlier, you know, I wanted since I was in high school. So for me, it was more of a now or never. You know, I was more of, let them say whatever they want, let them talk, but like, I'm here to make a difference. And if I don't at least try to do that, then I don't want to be, you know, 80, 85 years old and just sitting around talking about the old days and just wishing, like, you know, wondering what would have been. So I was like, let's do this.
Yeah, because it's sometimes you think it's like turning into Beverly Hills over there or something. I'm like, how can mm-hmm. people afford? It's a crazy to see Hudson, the difference between 2000, 2001, and, you know, the gentrification, mm-hmm. the G word. It's, but you being in the trenches, holding it down and making sure they're not blowing up low income housing and kicking everybody out to make a high end, funky little city, you know,
yeah.
I think that might be part of what you're doing. I don't know, but mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, that's not happening under my watch.
Okay.
Like my job is to make room for people who want to be rooted here, raise families here. We have a number of housing initiatives and a few projects in the pipeline. One that we just broke ground on over here on 7th Street, and that's the Depot District. And then, you know, two more that are going to really be crucial to the fabric of the future of our city.
I think that's a huge, huge piece right there of progress moving forward, and how we can do that in the face of massive wealth coming in, which sugarcoats mm-hmm. their intent by saying, oh yeah, we got this, oh yeah, we got that, we got the community here. But in reality, the end result is pushing people out, whether
yeah.
deeply intentional or not. That's the end result in a lot of communities across the country over the past decades.
Mm-hmm. And we broke ground on one, so I'm happy. We got one done, one that's, you know, a shovel in the ground so far. And then a big project, I'm hoping at the start of next year, we'll be breaking ground again. So, you know, I know Tom, who is listening from the radio heavens, I know he was frustrated last year, you know, with the lack of progress across both counties and housing. But like, Tom, we broke ground on one. So yeah, like, we're working on that next one, which will really be the game changer.
It sounds like you got some great optimism there. I want to tell one story, and then I'm going to let you talk more about what you actually want to talk about, Mr. Johnson.
Yeah, no problem. I'm here.
But like, it's just one thing that drives me nuts. And I looked at your 40 under 40 nominations, and just looking at the stories of people in the community going back born and raised in Hudson, all just like this amazing people that we have that, well, I'm not there anymore, that we have in the community. But, you know, I have someone up here over in the Berkshire. She was born and raised in Hudson. She's in her 20s, I believe. And she told me this story. I was getting coffee and she's like, yeah, it's crazy what's happening in Hudson. You know, I got out of Hudson, you know, before high school, and she was raised in the low rises, and people were like, oh, you were born and raised in Hudson. That's so cool. I love Hudson. Now, this individual came from a severely broken home, like dirt poor, a lot of abuse, just absolute poverty, and has a lot of trauma from her childhood. So when people come to her and are like, it's so cool, you're from Hudson, she's like, actually, no, it's not. Yeah. It's not cool. I don't know how to explain that to you right now, because you love Hudson, you live there, you go shopping. But like, I think there's also that those old stories of, I feel like that's part of the healing that needs to be done as we move forward. But I just wanted to share that story with you, and then let you take it from there.
Yeah, no, that's, you know, part of the reason why I do this, because, you know, I'm also a member of, you know, someone who shared those stories of growing up very poor in Hudson, you know, not being able to afford housing, you know, family members either incarcerated or, you know, dealing with substance abuse, all of the issues that a lot of our local people are dealing with or have dealt with. So, you know, when I do this work, I take it personal. That's why, you know, when you read about me in the paper or in the blogs or wherever, you know, that's why I always seem so animated, because, like, you know, I'm not here to play around. Like, I want to get stuff done. And I think that's, you know, why, you know, I've been able to last way longer than people thought I would. And that's, you know, why I have the resume that I do, is because, you know, I'm about action.
Yeah, well, apparently, contrary to what some people may have stated in the past, you're not just a kid.
Yeah. It's funny, because when I first got elected, whenever I was being announced somewhere, they would be like, and now we got, you know, our young mayor. And then they would announce me and everybody would clap. And now they just say, and now the mayor. Like, they took the young part off.
You're listening to Waveforms WGXC 90.7 FM radio for open ears. This program is Frequency, and my name is Mayuko. Frequency invites the local community to be inspired by the joy, beauty, and wisdom bird enthusiasts find in the nature of our neighborhoods. Every episode features an interview with local bird people. For today's episode, I spoke with Leslie Doyle, the president of the Rolif Jansen Historical Society in Copake Falls. Leslie's kind and loving and often humorous observations of wildlife in her backyards in busy Manhattan and rural Hudson Valley remind us to appreciate the here and now wherever you are. The here and now is also the culmination of people's lives before us. Leslie shares how the New Deal era environmental improvement program restored the trees we see now in Copake Falls. The trees had been devastated by the Copake Iron Works, which was an iron extraction and production operation that played a crucial role in the local development. I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Leslie as much as I did. Thanks for tuning in. This is Frequency. Okay, so could you briefly, well, introduce yourself and tell us what Rolif Jansen Historical Society is?
Okay, well, my name is Leslie Doyle, and I'm the current president of the Rolif Jansen Historical Society. And the society was formed actually nearly 50 years ago this coming summer of 2024 will be our 50th anniversary. It was formed by the town historians of five towns, local towns, of Ancrum, Copake, Hillsdale, Gallatin, and Taconic. And all of these are kind of united by the Rolif Jansen River. That's a major tributary to the Hudson River. It starts in Austerlitz, and it goes all the way through Columbia County and empties at Lithgow into the Hudson River. And that's why everything is called Rojan in this area.
Yeah.
The Historical Society's mission probably best describes it, because we are charged with collecting and preserving and sharing local history, which we try to do. And we do this through programming. We do this through maintaining archives, maintaining an ever-expanding collection, and also through exhibitions. And we have a major exhibition every summer. So we are the repository of local history, and we have oral histories that we share. We have a very active website, and it's been our pleasure to really make everybody feel welcome there, and that their stories count and are important. And we have, major objects, and we have like can openers from a local bar that closed that was important to people. So it's varied, and it's ever growing, ever expanding. And we're lucky enough also to be to have our own home, which not every small town has. So we are in a former church, the old Copaig Methodist Church, which was built in 1892 and served the community for 63 years, but then in 1955 it was closed. The Methodist congregation was moved to Church Street in Copaig Flats, as they called it, and the church was closed for 28 years and abandoned. So neighbors sort of looked after it and mowed the grass, but the windows were broken, the roof started to leak, and so on. But the local community saved it and rescued it and repurposed it and gave it to the Historical Society. Mm-hmm. So that is our most significant object that's preserved, is the church building itself. And it's a wonderful place to exhibit and to have our programming.
Mm-hmm. I also really like that you have small things like can opener you mentioned.
Yes, indeed.
Because usually when people talk about history, it's usually the winner's side of the story,
right?
People who are accomplished something big.
Right.
But local history.
And we have that too.
Right.
But we have the small
also,
things.
Yes. Right, telling the story of.
And we're here to tell the story, yes, indeed.
More ordinary people who lived here and who are around us. And I saw some similarity with that and the birding, because when I started paying more attention to birds, I came to realize that it's not just about knowing birds, mm-hmm. but to know what's surrounding them. And, you really have to understand the environment and the history around birds,
yes.
in order to understand bird itself.
Mm-hmm.
And so I came to sort of appreciate that. And we chatted a little bit about it when mm-hmm. we met, and
yes.
you mentioned also you're literally a birder. I mean, you love birds, and we're sitting here mm-hmm. right by a bunch of birds in your own backyard. Something just came. Oh, it's a titmouse. But
yes.
So I wanted to mm-hmm. ask you also about mm-hmm. your personal relationship with birds. You had a, family episodes, and, just how you, have a...
Well, my parents were very invested in birds as well. And we had, I grew up in a townhouse in Manhattan in the Chelsea neighborhood that was, had a huge backyard, larger than the usual. And it had been, when my folks first moved there, a lot of the buildings on our block, and this was in the very early 1950s, had been transformed into rooming houses. And it was a rundown waterfront neighborhood, and people started buying up these old buildings and renovating them and repurposing them and living in them. And we were lucky enough to have a woman from Tasmania, of all places,
oh.
who bought the house and did lots of wonderful work on it. And she was very tiny, and she was a horticulturist, and she became she was the head of the horticultural society in New York City for a time. And she transformed what was basically just a muddy backyard. And in those days, people hung their laundry out. So there were lots of laundry lines and laundry hanging. And she transformed this with flagstones. She made a deal with the police department to get manure from the Morgans, the horses, from the horse detail. There was a fish market around the corner, and she made a deal with those people to get the fish heads and enrich the soil, and it transformed it into this really magnificent garden. And my parents were, and when she finally decided to move back to, she moved to Perth, Australia, and she was a Big Bird fan also. She said to my parents, I would like to offer you first option to buy, because I think you'll love it and you'll take care of the garden. Mm-hmm. And of course, along with this beautiful garden, were birds. So we always had feeders. And I didn't really know as a kid, you know, I knew, I appreciated it and so on, but I just didn't know the names of the birds. I knew a blue jay, I knew pigeons and so on, but they really sort of cultivated that. And eventually I understood what they what they saw in it and why they enjoyed it. If you'll look up here, if I can make this reference.
Yeah, yeah.
This is a Subway poster that my daughter gave me for my birthday, and it's got pigeons on it, and she knows how. So we've... The rock dove. Mm-hmm. So they're much derided as vermin, but I have always been very fond of pigeons. Anyway, when in adulthood, we had befriended two pigeons. One was named George, and he was flightless. And in front of the townhouse was an areaway with a gate and all the houses down the block, which is very typical in New York City. And he remained in the gated area, and he would come when you called his name.
So he knows his name.
He knew his name. He knew. And he would sometimes go out the gate, and we would sort of be, when I picked up my daughter from school, we'd sort of hang out in front, and George would come out and visit with us. And if he'd start to go out, we'd say, George, George, come back. Anyway, so he lived with us for a couple of years and passed. Aww. But he had a, you know, he had a great time.
You named him George. Why?
My father named him George. I don't know why. He just thought he looked like a George. And then I had a very special relationship with a pigeon that we called Specky. Mm-hmm. And she was mostly white and with speckles. And I loved this pigeon. And she had, unfortunately, around her leg, she had gotten a string. And I could never get close enough to get it off of her, so she must have just gotten used to it. Mm. But when I would come home from work and be walking from 9th Avenue down, I would see her up in the, across the street on one of the windowsills, and I would make a special call to her, and she'd come swooping down, and I would feed her. Mm. And this went on for a couple of years, and one day she didn't come back, but... So Specky, so everybody remembers Specky very well.
So neither are your pets. They're like more
they were
like
the
residents.
Outside. They were the outside birds. So, and then we had the blue jays and the other birds and the and lots of sparrows, of course, mm-hmm. which is a very urban bird. But those were two special bird relationships that we had in the city. And then when we moved up here, there was a tree, if I can once again reference where we had this arbor where we hang the bird feeders, mm-hmm. there was a single tree there, and the previous owners had placed a feeder on branches that extended, so it was very symmetrical. So we just fell in love with the birds, and we would only come up on weekends, and the first thing that we would do is, of course, take the dog out and the cats if we had them, and then we'd rush out and fill the feeders right away. And anyway, so we just became avid bird fanciers and started to learn all their names, and friends have given us all the famous Sibley books and Peterson mm-hmm. on birds, and it's just become a part of our life. And the first thing that you do in the morning, you make the coffee, and then you go out and feed the birds in all kinds of weather. Mm. And then, of course, getting to know them through the seasons is incredible.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
The way Israel defends itself matters. It's imperative that Israel act in accordance with international humanitarian law and the laws of war, even when confronting a terrorist group that respects neither.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken repeated calls for Israel to spare civilians in its war against Hamas. Another set of hostages and Palestinian prisoners were released Thursday under a deal extending a pause in the fighting. The Biden administration is pressing for a permanent peace deal that includes safety for Israelis and self-determination for Palestinians. New York Republican Congressman George Santos continues to resist calls to resign ahead of a vote expected to expel him from the House.
Every member expelled in history of this institution has been convicted of crimes or Confederate turncoats guilty of treason. Neither of those applied to me, but here we are.
Two previous efforts to remove Santos failed, but a damning report from the House Ethics Committee could change that. Controversial Florida Republican Matt Gaetz is still defending Santos.
Whatever Mr. Santos did with Botox or OnlyFans,
is far less concerning to me than the indictment against Senator Menendez, who's holding gold bars inscribed with Arabic on them from Egypt.
Chaos erupted at Senate Judiciary Thursday after the committee issued subpoenas for billionaire conservative donor Harlan Crow and conservative court activist Leonard Leo, both tied to Supreme Court ethics scandals. Tennessee GOP Senator Marsha Blackburn argued with Chairman Dick Durbin, Democrat of Illinois.
Mr. Chairman, don't we get the opportunity to speak?
We're in a roll call.
So you're telling us to shut up?
Even though multiple
members
have asked
to speak? You want us to shut up?
All the Republicans walked out of the committee's meeting, and some later said Crow and Leo should ignore the subpoenas as invalid. Director of the CDC, Dr. Mandy Cohen, stressed the importance of vaccinations in testimony about the coming flu, RSV, and COVID season.
COVID is still the respiratory virus that is putting the most number of folks in the hospital and taking their lives.
The Child Labor Act, now before Congress, would raise penalties for companies who violate underage labor laws and let kids injured in the workplace sue. Connecticut Representative Rosa DeLauro says her bill is necessary because the labor shortage has industries employing more children.
This is in response to industry to have more workers, more than likely who are underpaid, and that they can get cheap labor for doing the jobs that they are doing and taking risks with children.
10 states have looked at rolling back child labor protections in the last 2 years, and federal child labor violations have nearly doubled over the last 4 years. The death of Henry Kissinger is provoking sharp disagreement over his legacy. The former Secretary of State was known for using covert military force in the developing world during the Cold War, but also for opening relations with China. He'll be buried in a private ceremony followed by a public memorial in New York. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. In November 2022, Michigan voters passed a constitutional amendment enshrining voting protections and expanding ballot access. Throughout 2023, the legislature codified these mandates and passed additional reforms, making Michigan one of the year's democracy bright spots. Proposition 2 mandates 9 days of early voting, postage for mail-in ballots, a permanent absentee voter list, protections for both voters and election workers from harassment, and a tracking system for absentee ballots. It allows for the funding of secure drop boxes and the counting of military and overseas ballots if postmarked by Election Day. It clarifies that only ballots cast determines election outcomes, only the election board certifies that outcome, and that audits are supervised by the Secretary of State, not third parties. The pro-voter legislature, backed by a democracy-friendly governor, implemented most of those mandates this year. But Bolts Magazine reports that legislators went even further. Automatic voter registration was extended to additional state agencies and tribal nation offices, including the first U.S. law to automatically register formerly incarcerated citizens. Governor Gretchen Whitmer has yet to sign 2 bills allowing same-day registrants to vote without using provisional ballot status and to allow 16- and 17-year-olds to register early. We have a link to the Bolts Magazine article and Michigan's model legislation at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC Daily News. Ranga Justin reports in the Times Union that State Inspector General Lucy Lang's office released a report on November 30th that says that the state's prison agency used unreliable drug screening tests that produced false positive results. More than 2,000 inmates received disciplinary sanctions because of those false positive results. Corrections officials blamed unclear and misleading instructions with the test for the large number of false positives. Prison officials would often not wait to confirm the results through a laboratory, which the company explicitly recommended, but used the initial results to punish inmates. The report said, and I quote, "The consequences stemming from the deficiencies in the Department of Corrections and Community Supervision's contraband testing program may be far-reaching, and the punishments included solitary confinement and special housing unit, SHU cell confinement, keep lock, delays in parole eligibility, loss of privileges, including commissary, telephone, and receipt of packages, loss of access to prison rehabilitation programs, loss of good time parole credit, and family visitation rights, missed parole interviews, and other adverse effects on Board of Parole decisions," end quote. more than 2,220, and I quote, guilty, end quote, charges for drug possession, nearly 70%, were later modified because they came from the Searcy NARC 2 field test. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Jack Arpey reports in New York State of Politics that Governor Kathy Hochul signed a bill into law on November 30th that bars long-term care facilities from discriminating against any resident because of their actual or perceived sexual orientation, gender identity or expression, or HIV status. Hochul said, and I quote, New York seniors should be able to live their lives with the dignity and respect they deserve, free from discrimination of every kind. LGBTQIA+ and HIV-positive seniors are among our most vulnerable populations, and today we are taking steps to ensure that all New Yorkers, regardless of who they are, who they love, or their HIV status, find safety and support in places where they need it most. Hate will never have a place in New York, end quote. December 1st is World AIDS Day. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. Mid-Hudson News reports that Bard College's pre-professional graduate orchestra, the Orchestra Now, appears in a new Netflix film, Maestro, starring Bradley Cooper as the renowned composer and conductor Leonard Bernstein. They perform Beethoven's Eighth Symphony in the film, recreating a 1989 Tanglewood performance by Bernstein with a youth orchestra. The Orchestra Now executive director, Kristen Rocker, said, and I quote, "We arrived in Tanglewood to shoot our performance. After going through hair and makeup, the students headed on to the stage, where they worked for several hours with the Metropolitan Opera's music director, Maestro Yannick Nezet-Seguin, rehearsing and recording Beethoven's Symphony No. 8, end quote. The Maestro is in some theaters now and will be streaming on Netflix on November 20th. And you can read more about this story in Mid-Hudson News. And that wraps up the WGXC Daily News. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
Hi, everybody. This is Dan from Campbell Hudson. The Oberufer Shepherd's Play was performed for hundreds of years in a small Austrian village called Oberufer on the River of Danube. It's a native play told largely from the point of view of three bubbling shepherds who are visited by the angel Gabriel. They make their way to Bethlehem in search of the newborn Jesus child. Tradition had it that a group of ordinary citizens would come together each year at Christmas time to perform the play for the town. This year, the Camp Hill Hudson community has come together to put on this play for their friends and neighbors in the city of Hudson. Come see the Shepherd's Play at the Presbyterian Church on the corner of Warren and Fourth Streets in Hudson on Friday, December 15th at 7 p.m. and Saturday, December 16th at 4 p.m. Donations are greatly accepted. Happy holidays. Hope to see you there.